Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things podcast. A delightful review, if you'll have it, of what we got done on our morning show, which is over on 93.9 FM, Planet 93.9 FM. How about that?
It's kind of a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Like vaudeville.
Let's get nostalgic for stuff we just did. Hope you enjoy the top five things. My name is Dave. This is my partner, Darren. Hello there, Darren.
Hello, friends. Are we ready?
We are. We'll get started with number one.
Number one.
Number one.
There's been a debate for years who would win in a race, the Flash or Superman. Who do you think would win in a foot race, the Flash or Superman?
Well, I would imagine it'd be Flash.
No, Superman.
If it's a foot race.
No, Superman would win. Because Superman doesn't lose. I mean, he's faster than the Flash. The problem with Superman is he's the best at everything. There's really no holes in his
But he's not allowed to fly.
No, he would have to run.
Yeah.
But Superman would win in a foot race against the Flash. I think.
Does Superman do a lot of running?
Well, no, because he can fly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So how do you know how good he is running?
Because he's the best at everything. Flash versus Superman, I think it would be an interesting race to watch. But ultimately, Superman wins because he's just faster at everything.
I don't think it would be interesting to watch at all because I don't think we would be able to really notice anything.
I guess in the Justice League movie, they actually do it where they actually have a race because this is something that people have been debating. They first raced against each other in the comics in 1967.
Because if they took off in a race, they were going to like run to the end of the world and then back.
Yeah.
We wouldn't even be able to notice. They would just like, they're already back. We didn't see anything.
Yeah, Ripple, you're right.
We didn't see anything.
Well, it's a great point.
Like, would you like us to do it again?
That was a ripoff.
It wouldn't be interesting at all.
The first time they raced was in Superman 199. That was in 1967. The first two times they raced, it was for charity. I guess they've done this a couple of different times. And I'm looking here. It looks like Superman just barely wins. Just barely.
We could do that.
What?
Dress up as the Flash and Superman.
And race each other?
And do a race to the end of the world and back and raise money for charity.
Okay. Well,
it's like, on your marks, get set, go. We're back already.
The last time they did it, it was another race for charity. 10 laps around the world.
Okay.
Both men, Superman and the Flash, give their all. The Flash takes an early lead. Then Superman keeps going and closes the gap. The race takes on an added complication when Lex Luthor, who's watching the race, analyzes what's happening and realizes that at its current trajectory, Superman cannot win. So in another attempt to sway public perception about Superman, Luthor tells the charity that if Superman wins the race, he'll donate $1 billion to the foundation. He figures that when Superman loses to the Flash, people will blame him for the charity losing the potential windfall he's offering. But Superman hears this because of his super hearing. And he decides he can't let the charity miss out on that money, so he tries even harder to catch up with the Flash. He doesn't want to cheat by telling the Flash what's going on, so he pushes his speed to the limits. Thinking about all the impossible things he's done in the past for a good cause, he barrels through the race in the final moments and is able to just barely pull ahead and finish right before the Flash, which forces Lex Luthor to build a massive new home for children.
Does Superman have a problem with the Flash?
No, they're friends. It's just a friendly thing that they do. It's always for charity. I mentioned the Superman during the Flash because that's a debate that people have had for years, even though it's been settled a number of times in comic books, and I guess in the Justice League movie, that when they do race, Superman ends up winning. Just barely, but he does end up winning. But who would win in a fight? This is the new question that people are asking. Who would win in a fight between Rocky, the Italian Stallion Balboa, and John Lone Wolf Rambo? Rambo versus Rocky in a fight.
Well, Rambo would win? Rambo would win.
You think if it were a fight, Rambo would beat Rocky?
Well, yeah. He's got like knives and guns and...
My guess is
And Rocky's got what? Boxing gloves. You can't even pick up stuff. You know how hard it is to hold a knife when you got a boxing glove on? Rambo would butcher Rocky.
That's a great point.
Adrian!
And that's the fight.
Exactly. Shoot him into pieces.
I think for the purpose of the argument, Rambo is just fighting physically. He's not using his bow and arrow with the dynamite.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Showdown of the Legends. This is a true fan. Rambo, the true fan group, presents Showdown of the Legends, the world's heavyweight championship fight between Rocky Balboa and John Rambo. Rambo versus Rocky. Who would win?
Who's younger?
Good question.
I think...
my guess is that they're the exact same age.
Huh.
But I'm guessing. I don't know. It's gotten to the point now where Sylvester Stallone has had to chime in to answer this question. Again, who would win in a fight? Not a fight with guns. And I'm guessing this is a heavyweight fight that's taking place in a ring, not out in the forest,
yeah,
or Afghanistan,
anyone,
or behind enemy lines in Vietnam.
Anyone can be a tough guy with a gun.
Right. Stallone weighing in as to who would win in a fight between Rocky and Rambo. And Stallone says the winner would be Rocky.
I don't think so.
Rocky would end up being the winner, he says, because, well, let me read here. He says that if this were to happen, this fight between Rocky and Rambo, he says, even I would pay to see this one. It's two men meeting in the street and going at each other with no rules, I believe the outcome would be, if the fighters were to remain upright, Rocky would prevail. His body punches and right hooks would eventually beat Rambo. If the fight goes to the ground, however, then Rambo would prevail in a bloody, brutal fight to the end. Rethinking this scenario, I believe that upon initial contact, since they will not be in the rain, but fighting outside, basically a street fight, Rocky will land the first 5 or 6 blows. If that does not incapacitate Rambo, which I don't think he will unless he's caught clean, Rambo's skill set will definitely be in full display. Boy, Stallone giving this a lot of thought.
Well, and the big reveal here is that he expects to be comped for everything.
Rambo's skill set will definitely be in full display, which means incredibly vicious assaults on the eyes, the throat, every vulnerable part of the body.
He's got
eventually leading to being pulled to the ground and, most likely, Stallone's words here, mauled. And now we're dealing with a mauling? Then again, he says, Rocky is incredibly resilient and pretty good on the ground, too. That's my opinion in this fictional world. Final result is neither man will ever be the same.
But let it be known, this is the only thing I'm willing to pay for.
I would pay.
Otherwise,
to watch.
I expect it for free.
I am not. Well, he put a lot of thought into this. Even I would pay to see this one. Well, it's you versus you, Sly. Does he think Rocky and Rambo are real people?
Oh, that'd be great to see.
I think if Sly says Rocky wins, then Rocky wins.
I think it's a more interesting fight between Mickey and the Penguin.
Both Burgess Meredith characters. Who wins in a fight between Mickey and the Penguin?
Well, I would think that the Penguin would try to inflict cigarette burns, but Mickey's got the razor blade. Cut him, Mick. Cut him. Cut him.
I think Mickey wins. Because here's the thing. I never saw Penguin win ever on the Batman show. Mickey's got that heart.
He takes a beating.
Even though Mickey is a full 10 to 15 years older than the Penguin, I'd say Mickey wins.
He's got a razor blade.
Two. In these uncertain times, we often have interactions and we wonder, are we in the wrong? Was I a jerk just now?
Did I do that?
Right. I've got people who are reaching out to the internet. They go on Reddit and they ask, am I a jerk? Three stories, and you, Darren, will decide if they're a jerk or not a jerk.
Well, let's decide together.
As a family. Yeah, feel free to text in at 470-23-NACHO if you have opinions on any of what you're about to hear. 470-23-NACHO. Thank you. Am I a jerk for telling my husband to stop speaking Spanish when I'm around?
What?
He met in Germany. My husband is 30, and he's from Spain.
Yeah.
I'm 28, and I'm from Germany. We met in Germany, and between us, we speak German. I don't know how to speak Spanish. We moved to Miami 6 months ago because of his job, and I hate when he starts to speak Spanish with random people, especially in restaurants.
What is this, Mexico?
Or with his friends. It feels like he doesn't care about me when he speaks Spanish, and I'm just standing there without knowing what he's talking about. Normally, he always speaks English with other people if we are together and he doesn't know the other person, but if he knows that the other person knows how to speak Spanish, he will always talk in Spanish, and he just forgets about me.
There's going to be a little, there's going to be some Spanish-speaking people in Miami.
In Miami, yeah. I've told him I feel weird when he's talking to people in a language I don't understand, and I've told him that if I'm with him, he should always talk to other people in English. He says that they are usually short conversations. Now, this is true, but it's still strange to just stand there with a smile without knowing what they're talking about. And if that's weird for him to talk with someone in a different language that they usually talk, he also says he loves to use Spanish in his day-to-day life and that I need to understand that. So am I the jerk? I'm not telling him to stop speaking Spanish. I'm just telling him to stop speaking Spanish when I'm around. We live in Miami, and everyone here knows how to speak a little English. And before you ask why I don't learn Spanish, when we first started dating, I decided to learn Basque. He's from the Basque country, a region in the north of Spain where they have their own language. Uh-huh. Because that's the language he speaks with the majority of his family. The problem is, it's a really difficult language, and I ended up giving up. I'd love to learn Spanish, but I don't have the time right now.
I think you do. Yeah. If it ever made sense for someone to learn how to speak Spanish, right? You're it.
So this person is a jerk. 66% of people in Miami speak Spanish, by the way. 2/3.
Yeah, if it ever made sense for anyone to speak Spanish, mm-hmm. to learn to speak Spanish,
yeah.
You're the candidate.
Yeah, if you feel weird that you don't know what they're talking about, you need to pick up on the language. Not he needs to just knock it off. I can only talk in English because my wife doesn't trust that we're not talking about her.
But we are. We totally are. We're totally talking about you.
How about this? Am I the jerk for selling my wife's purse after she sells my things? I'm 32. My wife is 36. I have a weird hobby. It's model trains. My whole basement is filled with them. I don't know when I first had this hobby, but ever since I've loved them. I have the money for model trains because I don't have any kids and I make a decent amount of money. My wife doesn't work, but that doesn't bother me. She's not an excessive shopper or gambler or drinker. She just lays around, and that's fine. She's worked most of her life. She deserves a break. However, she's gone too far this time. She will touch or play or do whatever she wants with my model trains, which is fine as long as she tells me if one breaks. Well, a week ago, I found out that while I was at work, a man came down into my basement and took a bunch of model trains.
What?
I was going to report it to the police, but my wife admitted that the guy gave her $100 for the trains.
What's going on?
The trains were worth far more than $100. I flipped out, but she stood by her actions, saying that I needed to grow up.
You let a man into our house?
I then
snatched... To buy stuff of mine? How does that happen? How does that come about?
She's had enough of all the model trains.
Yeah, but how...
So she just... She must have put an ad on Facebook or Marketplace or something?
Clearly.
Yeah, I've had
Otherwise, it's just a random man shows up to...
Uh-huh. Look, I lay around the house. I'm 36 and I've worked hard my whole life. I deserve this time. And
I'm a recovering workaholic.
I flipped out. She stood by her actions saying I needed to grow up. Then I snatched her favorite purse and I put it on Facebook Marketplace for $10. Within 5 minutes, someone came and picked it up. And now I'm the bad guy and I have to sleep on the couch.
What did he sell?
Her favorite purse.
Oh, God.
For $10. I'm guessing the purse costs a lot more than $10.
Oh, my God. Oh, they're going online and selling each other's stuff.
Yeah, my guess is this is not a marriage that's going to last very long.
No.
Am I the jerk for acting petty like this? He wants to know. You are, but also.
You're both insane.
Yeah. You two absolutely deserve one another. All right, last one. Am I the jerk because I ate more than my share of a 6-foot party sub last night?
That's not real.
What I thought would be a total non-issue has ballooned into a huge problem. And I'm up at 7:05 a.m. dealing with it. Oh, geez, up at 7:05 a.m. I figured a while I wait for a text, I could post here to see if what I did was really all that bad. I'm a big fat ass. There's no way around it. I love to eat, which probably borders on addiction. Mm. But I figure since I'm only hurting myself, it's probably better to just live my life.
It's funny because he's fat.
I have some great friends, although there is no doubt I'm the harmless, funny, token fat guy of the otherwise pretty good-looking group.
Uh-huh.
I guess that sets the stage enough. Last night, my friend hosted UFC, and I was invited.
Yeah.
He got a 6-foot party sub.
That's a big sandwich.
I also brought homemade wings that are sort of my specialty. Well, of course, people flock to the food.
Yeah.
And I had basically one serving of the sandwich.
Yeah.
But people devoured my wings, and I didn't get to have a single one, which is totally fine. That's why I brought them.
Yeah.
But maybe an hour later, I was starving. I kept eyeing the sandwich, and I'd say there was about 3 feet of it left.
Yeah.
I waited an hour, then another half hour, and no one had touched the party sub.
Right. Half the sandwich is still there.
They were still munching on chips, pretzels, and whatnot. So I was like, screw it. I took about half of what was left, and I ate it.
A foot and a half.
I took about half of what was left and ate it.
Yeah.
Then the last half of the sandwich sat there for another 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And no one said anything, so I just ate the rest.
Oh, 3 feet. Wow. So you ate more than half the sandwich.
Well, to be sure, as I was swallowing the last bite, the host girlfriend asked me where the sandwich was. Like I was
when you're taking the last bite. Well,
Food all right?
Okay.
And to be sure I was swallowing the last bite of the host girlfriend.
Where'd that sandwich go?
Where the sandwich was. Like I was the guilty party. Pretty much everyone pointed at me.
Mm.
I guess they'd notice me eating the sandwich.
Well, yeah, sure they did.
She was furious and said that I was an incredible pig and that I had been super selfish to eat 3 feet of a sandwich.
Well, the thing about it is, if you've got a party sub like that,
yeah,
and it's 6 feet long,
yeah,
you know how wide those party sandwiches are?
Yeah. It's a lot of...
It's a lot of sandwich.
Yeah. I'm not even mad. Go after it. He says, I felt so bad. I tried to explain to her that I really did wait over an hour. And I thought people had lost interest in the sandwich.
Yeah.
I also tried to explain how everyone had ate my wings. And she said something along the lines of, well, you brought them to share, Alan. If someone had eaten over half of the wings by themselves, that's not sharing, is it? I offered to order a pizza or even go get some Subways.
Yeah.
And she said that was a pathetic offer because the party sub had been from a local shop owned by her friends. I said I was sorry, but the night was so tense from then on out. I woke up this morning.
How much of the night was left?
I mean,
it's over.
You're going to stay.
How long have you already been there?
Those UFC nights, they tend to go on a while.
I don't know.
I woke up this morning to several texts from my twin sisters, the host girlfriend's best friends, saying that I had got to get my stuff under control and that everyone's really mad at me and that I embarrassed myself last night. And I tried to explain to them what my mindset was, but they have not responded to those texts. So, was I a jerk for eating that much of the sandwich last night?
Oh.
What do you think?
I don't know. I wouldn't call you a jerk. It's a hell of an appetite.
He says, to clarify, this was not a Subway party sub. So, definitely not four times the size of a regular sub. It's a local place, so it's about 1.5 times the width of a regular sub.
Okay.
It's still a ton of food, don't get me wrong. But I can down 5 Subway footlongs in an afternoon easy.
Boy.
This was probably about equivalent to that. Not 12 Subways like some of you people are saying.
Some of you people that are taking shots at me. Boy, you are a big boy.
Well,
That's a lot of eating.
How much would a 6-foot party sub cost?
Well, oh, they're pricey. That'd be pricey.
Like $100?
I don't know if it'd be quite $100, but...
Like at Capriati's, if we were to get a party sub. I normally, like, whenever we have, like, the family over and we order Capriati's, everybody gets their own sandwich, right?
Because
some people like the Bobby with mayo and without mayo or the Capistrami. Like, if we were to do... Just a party.
Well, I don't know that Capriati's does that. They cater,
right?
But I think it's basically cut up in trays and such,
right? So they don't give you a 6-foot long.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, you can get a tray, but so they don't. When you get a tray at Capriati's, they don't say this is how many feet of.
Yeah.
If you get like the Little Italy or the Bobby Tray or Delaware's Finest.
Right.
They don't say how many feet.
But if you go to like a Hungry Hobo, they will have the big party, the big long sandwich, or they used to.
I got to know, what would a 6-foot sub at Hungry Hobo cost? And I'm just trying to think if this guy bought, okay, a 6-foot sub from Hungry Hobo is $100.
Okay.
$96.99. So this guy ate $50 worth of sandwich.
Yeah, but he brought wings.
I wonder, too, if he's like, I could go get some Subway and some pizza, thinking like, oh, good, the pizza's here.
I mean, isn't the evening over?
I would have.
How can you do anything after you've eaten 3 feet of sandwich other than just roll into bed?
And when you bring food to a party, your expectation shouldn't be that you're going to eat the food. Like part of his argument is, you know, I brought wings and I didn't even get to have one.
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, feel good that you brought something people liked. Well, people were munching on chips and pretzels and whatnot, but they weren't eating the sandwich. So as far as I'm concerned, he says, you know, that sandwich is, yeah, is fair game.
Yeah, take it as a compliment that they're eating your wings, not as a rite of passage.
Yeah, honestly, I would be happy that the sandwich didn't go to waste. If I spent $100 bucks on a sandwich, and one of my friends ate half,
you're gonna try to stick 3 feet of a sandwich into the fridge.
Right, that's not gonna work.
No, eat it up.
What's the matter with you guys?
Well, I mean,
if you wanted some for later, then cut off a hunk and put it in the fridge.
Right. Right. And also, if there's mayo on that sandwich, how long has it been sitting out? Right?
Uh-huh. The meat's starting to turn gray.
And she just calls him a pig in front of everybody.
Hey! Come on.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a lot of... Everyone here's a jerk, right? Are these all jerks? It's pretty rare.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
All three of these stories are people that are acting pretty monstrously.
Not a great group.
No.
Number three.
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 There's this bill being introduced in the Florida legislature.
Florida.
Ah. It's awaiting the signature of their governor down there that would temporarily keep the names of lottery winners secret. That when you win a big lottery prize, a big jackpot, that's something that you can keep to yourself. There is a woman who is helping to lobby for the passage of this bill. Her name is D.D. Moore. D.D. Moore says it's important that we keep the information of lottery winners private.
Dinty Moore?
Not Dinty Moore. D.D. Moore. D.D. Moore says the public should not know about these big lottery payouts.
And then that way, mm-hmm. we never have to pay them out.
No. The reason that D.D. says that people need to be able to keep this sort of thing private is... when you win that kind of money, and especially living in Florida, your life is at risk. You are in danger when you have that kind of money. You win a big payout instantly now. There is quite literally a target on your back. And Dee Dee knows what she's talking about because she murdered a guy that won $30 million. She's saying... you know, if I didn't know about him winning the lottery, maybe I wouldn't be in prison right now for murdering him. This story is the sort of thing that I can't believe they haven't made a movie out of it. It's November. It's 2006. And Abraham Lee Shakespeare and his buddy Michael Ford are on their way home from work. They stop at a convenience store in frost-proof Florida. They wanted to get drinks and a pack of smokes.
A pack of what I am. Cool, baby.
A bottle of bump and a pack of what I am. Exactly. So Michael Ford gets out of the truck and asks Shakespeare, hey, you want me to get you a Coke or something? And Shakespeare says, nah, here's what I want you to do. Get me 2 lottery tickets.
Uh-huh.
Shakespeare gives him $2 for the lottery tickets. He only had $5 on him. And he goes, nah, instead of a Coke, get me a lottery. Give me 2 lottery tickets. So he gives him $2.
And then he spills the Coke on him, and he goes, smooth move, Shakespeare.
Probably heard that a lot.
No, actually, it's nice play, Shakespeare. Smooth move.
It's smooth move, X-lax.
Right.
Smooth move, Shakespeare.
why did he? And Shakespeare just looked at him like,
"What?
What?
That doesn't make it any sense."
It's like, I know.
Abraham Lee Shakespeare said to be a casual laborer.
Okay. Well, I can get behind that.
He wins the lottery with the money that he gives the ticket to his friend who goes and buys the ticket.
Yeah.
And then he wins a $30 million jackpot.
That is a big one.
Right. He takes the lump sum payment of $17 million.
Take it all.
And this is when the trouble starts for Abraham Shakespeare. First off, the guy that he gave the money to that bought the ticket for him said,
"Yeah,
you know, you need to give me a little something for the effort." He said, "You got to give me, I will take no less than $1 million.
Yeah,
you got $17 million. You wouldn't have any of it if I hadn't bought the tickets for you.
I think that sounds fair."
Well, Shakespeare refused to pay. And that prompted Ford to sue Shakespeare, saying, "You know what? That was actually my lottery ticket the whole time. He took it out of my wallet." That went to trial, and the jury did not believe the story of stolen lottery tickets.
Uh-huh.
As Shakespeare prevailed in courts. Of course, he could afford to have really good lawyers.
At that point.
Yeah, he's walking around with $17 million. He moves out of his working-class neighborhood in Lakeland, Florida, into a nice gated community.
Mm-hmm.
Buys a $1 million home.
Wow.
He gets a Rolex, but he buys the Rolex from a pawn shop. And he decides to splurge on a vehicle.
Yeah.
A very sensible Nissan Altima.
Okay.
That's all he does with the money. More and more people are hanging out, strangers, hangers-on. And it gets to the point where everyone is just constantly asking him for money.
Sure.
And he got to the point where he told a childhood friend, "I'd have been better off broke. I thought all these people were my friends, but then I realized all they want is just money."
Well, no, they're not your friends.
No, exactly.
These people, you mean these people that are hanging out with you after you won?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, you didn't know them until then?
Doris Donegan Moore, or Dee Dee Moore.
Dinty Moore.
We call her Dinty. She launched a business with Abraham Shakespeare. Abraham Shakespeare, LLC. And Dee Dee gave herself control of the firm's money. All the funds were in Dee Dee's control. She then withdrew $1 million, bought herself a vet, got herself a Hummer, and got herself a truck, and then she went on vacation.
So you can just withdraw $1 million from a bank and the bank doesn't ask questions?
Well, she was in charge of, it was a business and she was in control of it. Bought a truck, a Corvette, and a Hummer. And then Abraham went missing. November 2009... Shakespeare's family reported him missing, saying that they hadn't seen him since April of that year. Everybody had hoped that he took his money and was just living on the beach in the Caribbean somewhere. But then they got a tip saying, "You might want to check Dee Dee's backyard." And they did. And there they found the body of $30 million jackpot winner Abraham Shakespeare, buried in her backyard. She's in jail. And now she's saying, "We really got to keep lottery winners private. Because
we got to stop people like me.
Bad things happened." They found his body under 9 feet of dirt under a newly constructed concrete slab. Abraham Shakespeare was 42 years old. They think that she killed him on April 6th or 7th. And then started making all kinds of moves with his money. And she is, again, at the forefront of this bill that says, when we know who the lottery winners are, bad things can happen. And I know what I'm talking about, dude, because I killed a guy.
I fell prey to it.
The bill would keep secret for 90 days the names of anyone who wins more than $250,000 unless the winner wants to be publicly identified. I guess that 90 days gives you enough time to get the hell out of Florida.
Get the hell out of wherever.
Yeah, right. It's a tragic story. And again, this guy said he would have been better off if he was broke. It gives you something to think about, you know?
Well, I know that you always get nervous when the lottery gets too big.
When it's one of these $100 million jackpots, yeah, I want nothing to do with that.
because I'd live the rest of my life in fear that they were coming for me. I'd like to win just enough money to pay off the house, maybe go on a couple trips. That's it. This idea of having a mansion and a helicopter and all of that, not for, no, nothing, no, there's no chance. No, thank you.
You're going to start flying a helicopter?
Well, isn't that the first thing you do? I don't know. It's like these oligarchs with their $600 million yachts that are being taken over, which is fantastic. You need a $600 million boat? At some point, they're coming for you. You can't.
You'd be tied up in the power lines in no time.
You know I would, too.
There he is.
Did it again.
Everyone's power goes out. Oh, God. Lavora with that damn helicopter.
Number four.
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 Someone had an unused ticket. An unused ticket from Michael Jordan's NBA debut.
Okay, so it's not like the stub.
No. Unused.
Couldn't go.
First game in 1984. And he was going to sell the ticket. The guy who had the ticket, Mike Cole, says that until a couple of months ago, he would have taken $500 for it.
Yeah.
An unused ticket from the 1984 NBA debut of Michael Jordan.
Now, from what I understand, this is kind of a bit of a thing now. As in the past, you know, you were always talking about like trading cards.
Right.
But now there's quite a market and there's a lot of this going on with tickets.
So you
probably unused tickets.
An unused ticket is worth a lot more.
Sure, of course.
Obviously. This guy had the ticket stashed in his basement alongside some other keepsakes. But the ticket that he was, again, a couple of months ago, if you would have offered him $500, he would have said deal.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up selling it. The only known unused ticket known in existence from Michael Jordan's NBA debut sells for $468,000.
Yep.
Sold for $468,000, including a 20% buyer's premium.
I wonder if Michael bought it.
There was a ticket from Jackie Robinson's.
I thought you were going to say
1947.
Jackie Rogers Jr.
from a taping of the $100,000 jackpot wad.
Uh-huh.
Oh, spin again! Isn't that always the way? A ticket stub from Jackie Robinson's 1947 Major League debut.
Okay, because
recently went for $480,000.
Okay, because that's going back far enough that just the stub is.
Well, if you're wondering the difference between a stub and a whole ticket,
yeah,
the highest graded ticket stub from the Jordan NBA debut game,
yeah,
ticket stub,
yeah,
sold just in December for $264,000.
Still.
The stub.
Wow.
An unused ticket, $468,000. Wouldn't you have kept the ticket stub if you went to that game? You keep ticket stubs for everything.
Yeah, you don't get them anymore, but.
Right. The flurry of lucrative sales, Yahoo writes, reflects how the market for vintage sports tickets has surged during the past few years.
If I would have seen Jordan in his first year.
Yeah. We all knew he was going to be a big deal.
Well, he already was then.
Right.
I would have absolutely kept it. Because I kept, like I said, I kept all the concert stubs and sporting event stubs.
Now, the ticket stub that just sold for $264,000 was graded very high. So
yeah,
you had to take, I mean, normally you wouldn't take such good care of a ticket stub. You put it in your pocket. The one that sold, the stub that sold for $264,000, that broke the record for the most expensive collectible sports ticket ever sold. The previous record was a ticket stub from the 1903 World Series. That's the first game three of the 1903. That would be the very first World Series. A ticket stub from the game three of the first ever World Series in 1903 sold for $175,000. There were 13,000 people in attendance
at the old Chicago Stadium
mm-hmm.
when Michael Jordan and his Bulls beat the Washington Bullets 109-93. Jordan scored 16 points, 6 rebounds, and 7 assists. Also blocked 4 shots. The third most by a rookie in a team season opener all time. But if you're telling me there were 13,000 people at that game, everyone just threw out their tickets, or are a bunch of people sitting on these things? It's a ticket stub. What am I going to do with it? Well, I would have assumed in 1984 that that ticket stub would be worth something someday.
Yeah, I mean, he was good enough even then.
The value of this unused ticket is that it's one of a kind. There are a few ticket stubs from that NBA game that have sold at auction, but no one else has ever uncovered an unused... Well, because no one's ever sold it. No one has ever uncovered an unused ticket. Yeah. And if anyone had it by now, you would think we would know it.
Start looking.
He was a freshman at Northwestern.
No, North Carolina.
No, the guy who had the ticket.
Oh, okay.
Mike Cole, the guy who had the ticket that, again, he would have sold for $500. It just sold for $468,000. I bet he's thrilled he didn't sell it for $500 to find out a month later it was worth almost half a million dollars.
I'm going to be sick.
If you're wondering how he got the ticket, it's a couple of weeks into his freshman year at Northwestern.
Sure.
And he had a family friend who worked for the Washington Bullets. And he surprised Mike with a pair of tickets to see the season opener with the Bulls. And he offered the second ticket to a bunch of guys in his dorm.
Yeah.
And nobody was willing to go from Evanston.
So he went by himself?
Nobody was willing to go with him from Evanston to the West Side. Now, the Bulls were not much of a draw back then.
No.
It says here there wasn't a lot of buzz preceding the debut of the rookie guard from North Carolina, who was drafted after Hakeem Olajuwon and Sam Bowie. I would argue that there was buzz. But yeah, on October 26, 1984... this guy traveled by himself by train to Chicago Stadium.
I'll keep this ticket for myself.
He picked up two tickets at the will call window. One he used to get into the game, and that one he threw away. That ticket stub he threw away, but the other one sat in his shirt pocket, and then he put it in a manila folder where he kept old tickets from memorable games that he had attended.
Yep.
And it stayed in that manila folder for almost 34 years as he moved from apartment to apartment, got married, bought his first home. Eventually, the ticket folder landed in a box alongside his high school and college yearbooks and some old photos. Also, an autographed Cindy Crawford calendar. She went to Northwestern. I guess that makes sense. Also, a purple pom-pom from Northwestern's only trip to the Rose Bowl. He had no inkling that this ticket was valuable until in December, when that ticket stub sold for more than $200,000, a friend said, "Hey, don't you have a whole ticket?" He read the article about the ticket that sold for $200,000.
Bryce started to freak out.
He said his hands started to tremble when he realized he had a full unused ticket from that same game. Oh my.
Yeah,
I gotta go home and check on something.
Yeah, your body would just take over, wouldn't it?
Okay. Oh, this is.
Please still be there.
Right.
Because even though you're convinced it's there.
Yeah. He entered the basement of his home in Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
opened a clear plastic container labeled Mike's Memories.
Please!
And grabbed the manila folder from inside. There, among a heap of worthless Northwestern football, Cubs, and Red Sox ticket stubs, sat a decades-old Bulls one with the potential to be his golden ticket.
Yep, there's your retirement.
He tells Yahoo Sports, "I'm a huge sports fan, and I enjoy keeping tickets as memories of good times I've had."
But not that much.
Before that night, if you'd given me $500 for that ticket, I would have taken it. I wasn't waiting for the right time to sell or figure out if I had the only one. I just didn't know this market for tickets even existed, he says.
There you go, right.
Over the next week, he would mail a couple of auction houses with his story and a photo of the ticket.
Yeah.
More often than not, the phone would be ringing within minutes of him sending the email to these auction houses.
Yeah.
It was Heritage Auctions who put the ticket up for sale 4 weeks ago, and they accepted bids through Sunday morning. He said it was very exciting. He would just go and check the auction page and keep refreshing it.
I bet he was.
As the bids were increasing in $10,000 increments.
Yeah.
Every time you hit refresh, there's another 10 grand at least.
That's a freshie.
Some industry insiders predicted that this thing could sell for as much as $1 million. It did not get there, but it's still money he says he did not expect to have. And the plan is he's going to use it to pay off the mortgage, and he's got two kids that are going to go to college.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll travel overseas. That's what he'll do.
Yeah.
Because no one on his floor wanted to go to a Bulls game. Because nobody wanted to go.
Boy.
He just went by himself.
You would sure remember that day now, wouldn't you?
Oh, my gosh.
That was my day. That was my golden ticket. That was my day.
And he didn't. He had no idea?
No, of course not. But you remember that day.
Right.
And just think about riding around, and you've just got that thing in your pocket nonchalantly.
I'll just put it in my pocket. No big deal.
No whoop.
Five.
Number five.
I've got something from the Love Dies Young Files here, Darren.
Oh, yeah?
This story comes to us from Wisconsin, where a woman choked her lover to death during a drug-fueled sex romp, and then the cops say she dismembered him.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's weird. Also weird is the woman who's alleged to do this, her name is Taylor D. Schnabusiness. Taylor D.
Schnabusiness?
Schnabusiness.
What is your schnabusiness?
That's not schnabusiness. Taylor D. Schnabusiness. S-C-H-A-B-U-S-I-N-E-S-S. Schnabusiness.
Is it possible she gave them, the authorities, a fake name?
I don't think so.
And what exactly is your name? Schnabusiness.
Not Schnabusiness.
Not Schnabusiness.
Taylor D. Schnabusiness is 24 years old, charged with first degree intentional homicide, not international homicide. I'm sorry. It's just, this sounds like a name Goose would have come up with.
Bob Schabunde. And that's, how is that spelled?
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Taylor D. Schnabusiness, charged with first degree intentional homicide
Shadoobie.
And mutilating a corpse, as well as third degree sexual assault, for acts prosecutors say that Ms. Schnabusiness did after the victim was dead. In the early hours of Wednesday, February the 23rd, police over by there in Green Bay, they were contacted by a woman who said she just found her 25-year-old severed head in a bucket. Okay. Oh! That's a fun call to make to the cops. When officers arrived, they...
I thought it was part of Aaron Rodgers' cleanse.
Consider yourself zing.
The zing of the day.
I mean, read a book once in a while, people.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Do the research.
When officers arrived, they found the bucket also contained a male organ. Searching the home, they found an upper torso in a storage tote.
Ooh.
Dried blood also found on a nearby mattress. The mother told police she was awoken by the sound of a door slamming sometime between 2 and 3 in the morning, and she assumed it was her son leaving. But when she got up to check a light that had been left on downstairs, she made the gruesome discovery.
It's her kid, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Officers were told that...
Mom, gonna have a sleepover, Kay!
Just don't... Not with that schnabusiness girl. She's nothing but trouble, Trevor.
Whatever, Ma.
Officers were told that Schnabusiness may have been the last person to see him alive.
You think?
When they went to her home, they said her clothes were covered in dried blood. Searching her minivan, they found a crock pot box containing additional human body parts, including legs.
How do you get a leg in a crock pot box?
Police asked Schnabusiness what exactly happened, and her response was, quote, That is a good question.
I'm not going to lie to you.
This is for you.
According to the complaint, she told investigators she spent the day with the victim smoking meth. After arriving at his mother's home, they started to have sex and incorporated chains. Authorities say she told them that she blacked out at some stage and just went crazy. She started strangling with the chain, him face down and her on top of him. She insisted she didn't mean to kill him, but she enjoyed choking him so much, she just continued to do it. She said he began coughing up blood and noticed he was turning purple, but since she was already this far, she decided to keep going. She reportedly asked one of the detectives, "Do you know what it's like to love something so much that you kill it?" The complaint here states that Ms. Schnabusiness responded that the police were going to have to, the police were going to have fun trying to find all of the organs as she dismembered the body. "You guys are going to have fun finding all of it. I've got them all over the place." She stated that she used knives from the kitchen of the residence and that a bread knife worked the best because of the serrated blade.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And Mom doesn't hear any of this?
No. No. There's a lot more to this.
Butt out, Ma!
There's more to this that I'm not going to share because as gross as it's already, it gets a lot grosser. Bond set at $2 million, and now Schnabusiness is back due in court later this month. She was put on probation 7 weeks beforehand and was supposed to be wearing an electronic monitoring bracelet, but somehow she figured out a way to get that off of her ankle there.
Yeah, the bread knife. Go pack.
Oh, yeah, I hate her. Criminy, she carved him up with a bread knife, yeah, I hate.
Not unlike the 49ers.
Is it all over, Rock?
I guess so.
I didn't think it'd be like this.
And that's going to do it for this edition of Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing, downloading, all of that.
How about a review?
We'll have another one for you as soon as we can. But until we get a chance to do it then for you, hang loose, kooks.
And you stay classy and safe, Quad Cities.
Come on, Quad Cities, represent. This is for the Quad Cities record spot. Davenport, yeah, we keeping it locked. Rock Island. Come on, and it just don't stop. East Moline, yeah, they keeping it hot.
Bye-bye.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.